Welcome back.
Welcome back to a whole new season of the Judo Chop Suey podcast. I think I'm going to call this season two. My name is Judo Dave Roman, for those of you who don't know. And I'm coming at you from the middle of nowhere, somewhere in the panhandle of Florida. It's very good to be back behind the microphone once again. And for those of you who are new to the podcast, I welcome you. I appreciate you checking me out or checking the podcast out. You can't check me out because I'm not on screen. And I guess that's the thing with podcasts these days is that everybody wants to stream videos and such. I don't go that route. I like to edit the podcast down quite a bit. I just don't like turning on the microphone and flapping my gums. So I prefer to play to the theater of the mind. As many of my longtime listeners know, I had a podcast, this podcast for, gosh, I want to say about 5 years, and I decided to hang it up a couple of years ago. I just got super busy. What can I say? I mean, I think it kind of coincided right around the time when I started teaching judo locally at my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu club, which I'll get into that later, what's been going on in my life. But I just wanted to catch you up real quick that I fully intend to start recording episodes semi-regularly. There's no way I can do a once-a-week schedule. That's just impossible for me. Maybe 2 weeks. Maybe it'll be once a month. This is just going to be a very casual endeavor for me. I must say, over the past 2 years, there have been a lot of listener outreach to me wondering how I've been, what I'm doing, when the podcast is going to come back. And I've always said, I always kept telling them, yeah, I'll come back one day. I'll do it one day. 2 years later, I'm finally back. So for those of you who are new, you guys don't really know the format of the way that I do things. Typically, I cover judo news happening around the world. I cover the events. Today I'm going to cover some bits of news that I find interesting, mostly French related. There's a Judo Fanatics video review that I want to do. And then, like I said, for my regular listeners or my longtime listeners, I'll catch you up on what's been going on in my life. I already dropped a little tidbit just a moment ago, So let's just get right to it, huh? I mean, it's kind of like riding a bicycle after you haven't ridden one in like 20 years, which I don't think I've ridden a bicycle in 20 years. But it's going to take me a little bit of time to get back into swing of things, into groove of things. But bear with me. I should be back to my normal self in an episode or two for sure. All right, so let's get to the first news article of the day, and it covers two of my most favorite subjects that I love to talk about. One is being judo, and the other being cryptocurrencies. I don't know if you guys remember, some of my longtime listeners, I'm one of those cryptocurrency bros. I just am. I have been for many years. It has been a lucrative endeavor for me. Crypto has helped me buy the home that I'm currently living in. It's helped me put my son through college. So when a story about judo and cryptocurrency collide, I have to talk about it. I mean, that's part of the reason why I came back to doing these episodes to begin with. All right. So this story comes out of the Asahi Shimbun, which is an Asian and Japan Watch online, article. I got this link off of Reddit, off of the judo subreddit, which I hang out quite frequently, probably more than I should, if I'm being honest. What it is, I work from home. I've got my own business. Like I said, I'll catch you up on my life, my personal life later. But I've got like four monitors in front of me. So one of them typically has the judo subreddit up and that kind of thing. So I'm always on the eye. I always keeping an eye out for news and things. So this is coming out of the Asahi Shimbun. Hopefully I got that pronunciation correct. Headline, former judoka arrested in crypto fraud case. All right, get this. Coming out of either the prefecture or the city of Chiba. A company executive and former Olympic judoka was arrested on February 29th on suspicion of defrauding a woman by claiming to use her investment to purchase cryptocurrency on her behalf. Kenji Maruyama, 58 years old, is accused of swindling about 40 million yen, and for us U.S. Americans, That's about $266,000 and $266,870 from a company executive in her 70s from Togane, Chiba Prefecture since 2018. The suspect allegedly used LINE messages and phone calls to persuade the victim into purchasing virtual currency, promising her a guaranteed return on the investment, according to police. Sounds like your classic rug pull in the meme coin sphere. Or it almost does. All right, continuing on. Chiba Prefecture police believe the total damages may reach several hundreds of million yen. Maruyama competed in judo at the 1992 Barcelona Olympics, where he finished seventh before retiring from the sport and opening a children's judo workshop in Kasuga, Fukuoka Prefecture. The Asahi Shimbun interviewed the former Olympian in November after the allegations surfaced. Excerpts from the interview follows. All right, this is rich. This is where I just busted out laughing where I read the article. All right, here's their question. You collected money from investors claiming to purchase cryptocurrency with the fund. Where did the money go? Maruyama, I used it for things like travel expenses when going overseas to buy cryptocurrency. Okay. The conversion of the cryptocurrency in question into cash hasn't started yet, so I haven't received much of it myself. Okay. Did you intend to swindle the investors? He responds, I never had any intention of deceiving anyone. I introduced cryptocurrency to them with good intentions. Uh-huh. Let's see. Question, why did you ask people to invest in cryptocurrency? Answer, 7 years ago, I met a woman through Facebook who said she needed my help to promote OneCoin cryptocurrency. I wasn't interested at first, but she kept inviting me just to listen to her speak. She encouraged me to attend a cryptocurrency seminar, and I went to one that was held at a hotel in Tokyo. There were some celebrities there, and I thought, this must be the real deal, so I started investing. Question, how did you meet the woman who paid you 40 million yen? Answer, I was introduced to her 4 or 5 years ago by an acquaintance of a person I met at the seminar. And that's how the article ends. It gives credit to the authors. Now here's the thing that really makes me laugh about this. Maruyama claims that he went overseas to buy cryptocurrency. I mean, who's he trying to fool? There have been cryptocurrency exchanges for well over 10 years. I mean, if you want to have an idea how long I've been involved in cryptocurrency, I was around for Mt. Gox. If you want to have some reference there. So there have been cryptocurrency exchanges that have come and gone for years, and the industry space is pretty established. Now, I personally use Coinbase. That's not an advertisement. It's just what I use. I'm a little miffed at them because I wanted to buy a cryptocurrency at a certain price, and the servers were overloaded yesterday, and then I didn't get the price I wanted. So I'm very, very upset with Coinbase at the moment, but I still use them because I'm a chump. What can I say? So he's not only that. So he says the conversion into cash hasn't started yet, so I haven't received much of it myself. Now, when you convert cryptocurrency to cash or cash to cryptocurrency, that typically happens in an instant on a regular exchange. And the only reason why anybody would travel to anywhere to purchase cryptocurrency is if they are trying to hide the money and not pay the taxes on cryptocurrencies earned or sold or whatever. I don't know what the tax law is in Japan, but I'm telling you, the only reason why anybody would travel to meet with a person in person to buy cryptocurrency with cash is that they don't want to leave a paper trail. And the only people who go through such lengths to do that are people who are trying to avoid paying taxes or crooks. Now, listen, I'm not saying Maruyama is guilty of a crime, and I'm not saying that he's a crook, but what I am saying is that he's full of shit. Now, in case you recognize the Maruyama name, this is sadly, in fact, Yoshiro Maruyama's father. And I can only imagine this has got to be a very, very devastating situation for the younger Maruyama. It is my understanding that Yoshiro's father has been very, very tough on him. Like expressing disappointment for only having two world championships, expressing disappointment for losing to Abe to make the spot on the Olympics for the 2020 games, which happened in 2021. And unless I'm mistaken, I do not believe Maruyama made it to the Olympic team for the 2024 games in Paris. I mean, I got to think that many of us that have been following the IJF for many years truly feel bad for Maruyama, because he could easily but be one of the all-time greats. He just happened to be born in the same era as Abe Hifumi. I mean, this is like, how would I even compare this? Like to the NBA, think of all the great players that played between, 1984 and 1999. There were so many legends that probably could have won a bunch of MVPs and a bunch of NBA championships, but they had to play in the same era as Michael Jordan, the greatest of all time, which I would probably say maybe LeBron has eclipsed them at this point. I'm not sure. I know that's a super, super controversial take. But anyway, getting back to judo. Yeah, so I think it's a real shame that Maruyama's going through this, with his father. I can't imagine that relationship is very close, given some of the comments that I've heard that the senior Maruyama has said publicly. I mean, it's just really tough for Maruyama. He lost out on the 2020 Olympic game bid. He lost to Abe in both 2022 and 2023 in the World Championships. Some people, probably people like Maruyama's father, would put an asterisk next to his gold medal win on the 2021 games. I'm sorry, 2021 World Championships, since Abe wasn't there because he was already going to compete for Japan at the Olympics. So yeah, I'll just end that story here. Just a real shame, real, really unfortunate story, just terrible all around. So as of today, as of this recording, there is 171 days left until the opening ceremonies of the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris, France. Now, starting on July 26th. And the judo portion, the judo specific events, is starting on July 27th, which is a Saturday. It's going to be starting at 10 a.m. local time, Paris time. I'm not sure what that is in GMT. I think that's what, plus one or plus two? I'm not quite sure. But from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock, the under 48 kilos and under 60 kilo elimination rounds are going to take place. And then later on that day, from 4 to 7, you're going to have the medal rounds for the under 48 and under 60 kilo divisions. And I'm sure, I'm not going to read the entire schedule, but I'm sure that every day it's going to be the subsequent weight division. So, the next day on a Sunday, it's going to be the under 66 and the under 52 kilos, and so on and so forth. Now, for myself, there are a number of French athletes that I am looking forward to watching in these Olympics. Starting first and foremost with Amandine Bouchard, who has been one of my absolute favorites to watch on the tour over these past several years. He's currently ranked third in the under 52 kilo division, which, honestly, to me, everybody in the top 10, it doesn't really matter the actual rankings that much to me personally, because in my mind, she's got to be able to get past Krasniqi of Kosovo, and she's got to be able to get past Abe of Japan, which is the lady that she lost to in the 2021 or 2020 games. I don't know. I never know. Is it the 2020 games or the 2021 games? I know they happened in 2021, but I still think they call it the 2020 Olympics. So moving forward, I'm going to call it the 2020 Olympics if I'm referencing the previous Olympics. But yeah, Amandine is one of my absolute favorites to watch. And of course, you all know my other favorite to watch is Clarice Agbegnenu in the under 63 kilo division. She's just a monster, a beautiful monster, I must say. And even though she's currently ranked third in the under 63 kilo division, I mean, let's get real. I simply do not see anybody in that division beating her at these Olympics on her home turf. It's just, to me, this is a slam dunk when it comes to gold medals as you can have in these Olympics. She got first place in the Tashkent Grand Slam just a week ago, less than a week ago, and she got first place at the Paris Grand Slam back a little bit more than a month ago. Honestly, I just don't see her losing. I'm also heading into these Olympics, representing France, you got Romain Dico in the plus 78 kilo division. She's been on a tear for really the past, I would say, really the past year and a half. And she won back-to-back gold medals in subsequent Grand Slams, both in Paris and Baku earlier this year. So I think she's a force to be reckoned with in that division, especially being on her home turf. And of course, going on the men's side, you have the greatest of all time that I'm looking forward to watching once again, and that would be Teddy Riner. Now, gosh, can he do it? Can he win gold on in his home city? I don't know. I mean, if this was 8 years ago, I would say as surely as the sun is going to rise in the morning, Teddy Riner is going to win gold. I mean, that might have been 8 years ago, but I don't think that's the case right now. Now, granted, he's currently ranked seventh in the plus 100 kilo division, but that's a really, really strong division. You've got, you got Tasov, ranked number one. You have Bashayev as well, who's ranked right below him. I mean, there's a lot of strong athletes in that division. Now, I don't know who's going to be representing the so-called individual neutral athletes, the AIN team, which is basically the Russian team. Can I say Russian without getting censored or something? I hope so. Oh yeah, that reminds me, speaking of Tasov and Riner, yes, I know this is old news from 9 months ago, but man, the IJF dropped the ball in making Riner share his world championship title with Tasov on really just a terrible officiating. And let me say this, I hope that after these Olympic Games that the IJF does something, improves the scoring somewhat, because some of these calls that I see in some of these matches just really, really have my head scratching. You know what it is? I've said this before. I've said this for many years on this podcast, the people that I know. I don't understand the mentality of a tie. I don't understand why Europeans and really the rest of the world, it seems, are A-okay with ties and sharing titles. That is just such a foreign concept to me, being a U.S. American, that it doesn't make sense. And by having Riner share his title with Tasov, you basically put an asterisk on Riner's historic 11th world championship. That should never happen. I mean, from my point of view, you compete, you play the win, you play to win the game. You don't play to not lose. It's just what if there's so many stories that I wish I was recording over the past 2 years that have come out that I just I would have loved to have commented on. A couple of things. And listen, in this new iteration of the Judo Chop Suey podcast, season two, I'm going to keep things a lot more positive than I have in years past. I want to say I've become a more positive person over the past, really ever since I moved up to the panhandle of Florida. I've just lived in nature, just becoming a more positive, happier individual. But I must say, over the past year or two, some big things that I wish I could have talked about then that I'll just gloss over quickly. The IJF putting their tournaments behind a paywall, I suppose that could be a good thing if the athletes are going to get a little bit more money. I think that's yet to be determined. But, you know, my point of view, I think that's a I don't like having to pay 100 U. Well, you know, and that's just the thing with the whole paywall thing. It's like, who's their market audience? Is it the Europeans? Because there's a lot of people, there's a lot of strong judo countries out there where 100 euro could be like it's a lot of money for a lot of people. Like I'm talking about, there's probably people out there that make 100 euro a month. So I'm not really a big fan of it. I do watch the events live when I can. I have a way of getting past the banners. I will keep that to myself. At least the last time I watched a tournament, there was banners and stuff all over the place, and I just I managed to get past it. And the other big thing that happened is The American Judo Alliance is no more. And that was a real mess, as far as I understand. I have a couple of sides of the story, but one side, I believe, way more than the other. It's about as much as I'll say about that. I will say that it seems like recently that the USJA is finally doing a lot of the things that I've said that judo organizations should be doing over the past five. When did I start this podcast? Let's see. Gosh, 2017? Yeah, that sounds about right, because it was 5 years, then I stopped for 2 years. So yeah, 2017. Yeah, a lot of things that I talked about since 2017, that it seems like the people at the USJA are actually doing it. Of course, they'll never give me credit for it, but they were my ideas, at least most of them. Anyway, I will take credit. Anyway, so it's all good. But with the disbanding of the American Judo Alliance, I would guess that could be a good thing, because now the organizations can do what they feel is best without being beholden to each other. I don't know. That's kind of the way that I see it. Now, with regards to USA Judo, you know, I got to say, if, you know, I'm looking, I would like to see, and I don't know if it's going to happen, there's a few athletes that if they don't make it in these Olympics, if they don't get it to the top 18, if they don't make the continental quota, I'm really looking to some athletes in the 2028 games in Los Angeles, in particular Jack Yonezuka. I think he's next. I don't know if these Olympics are going to be, if he's in the position to succeed in these Olympics, but I think he's going to be, my goodness. I mean, in 2028, he'll only be 24 years old. He'll have gained so much more experience by then. I firmly expect Jack to win, to be on that podium, hopefully with a gold medal, but certainly with a bronze in LA. I have no doubt about that. I would put money on that. If anybody can point me to a sports book that'll take bets on judo, I'll put that money on there right now that Jack will win a medal at the Olympics in LA. I think that's a stone cold lock. You can put me down as a guarantee, and yeah, for sure. And you know what else is interesting to me? USA Judo's highest ranking athlete is currently Maria Laborde of Cuba, but she's now representing Team USA. I don't know the particulars of how that happened, but in my view, it's about time that USA Judo starts doing the things that so many other countries do. in terms of making their team stronger and getting athletes from other countries to represent their team. If I didn't say it already, Maria is currently ranked in 12th in the under 48 kilo division. I'm not sure if she's at her age, at 33 years old, in that division, which is just the division of super fast ladies. I'm not sure if she will medal in these Olympics. But you know what? I mean, crazier things have happened. So moving along. I wanted to cover some. So what I'm going to do moving forward with podcast episodes is that I'm going to take some time to cover a Judo Fanatics video that I bought and give a really just a high level overview and review of it, because really over the past couple of years, I've been collecting Judo Fanatics video. Hans, I'm sorry. Everybody should be watching or should be reading judoinside.com. If you're not, the hell's the matter with you? But Judo Fanatics, I've been collecting videos, buying them really over the past couple of years with a little bit more frequency, both on BJJ Fanatics and Judo Fanatics, but definitely more Judo Fanatics. There's really a lot of great material. Now, of course, I never pay full price for this stuff. I wait for the daily deal, and then I put in the coupon, and then if I can get away with it, I'll put in another coupon. So I end up spending about $5.99 for a $60 video. Since I was talking about the Olympics and Paris, France, and the French national team on the women's and men's side, I want to briefly review winning combinations by Darcel Yanzi. For those of you who don't know, Darcel Yanzi is a world-renowned judo coach from France. I believe he competed at the 1996 Olympics, and he earned a bronze medal at the World Championship sometime in the 90s. I'm not too sure when. But he has a style of judo that I don't look, my judo is my own. But if there are certain flavors that I've incorporated into my style of judo, and the way that I move and the way that I do certain throws, I do some things very much like Darcel Yanzi in terms of footwork movement and certain throws. Like, well, I take this for example. In this video series, he does an instructional on Osoto Gari with a Sode Tsurikomi grip. Now, Tsurikomi Goshi grip. Now, I thought I invented that a couple of years ago, but apparently not. It's one of those throws that I like doing when if somebody gets a double lapel on double sleeve grip on me, I kind of turn the tables and get the double sleeve on them. I push their arm right across their face, and I do an Osoto Gari from there. I'm very comfortable doing that. I was just actually teaching that to somebody just a couple of days ago at my club. And the thing with Yanzi is that he really covers entries and angles of attack in a way that is not very commonly seen. And I've tried to incorporate that a little bit in my own judo. So he introduces, the video starts off with covering his Sode grip Uchimata. And then he covers into the Sode grip Osoto Gari. And then he covers setting up the Sode Uchimata and Sode Osoto Gari off of those grips. He also covers the Yashibarai right versus right and right versus left with his own style of doing it. He's very good, even though. So now listen, the video is in French, but it is subtitled, and he's just very good with the details. You know, especially if you don't really understand the language and you're not keen on just reading, you know, what he's trying to say, you can look at what he's doing and really understand how the throws are actually working. So those throws is what he covers in Darcel Yanzi's Winning Combinations 1. And there's a part 2 to the video as well. In part 2 of the video, he covers Uchimata with his power grip. He covers Kouchi Gari. He covers a combination of Osoto Gari to Sasai Tsurikomiyashi. He covers Ouchi Gari, Sumi Gaeshi, and Hizuguruma. That's in the part 2. So you pay one price for two chapters, I guess you want to call it. And right now, you can buy that video for $47 and then use a 47% off coupon. And if you're lucky, if it ends up on the daily deal again, I know I don't think I paid more than $10 for this video because I waited for it to be on the daily deal and I used a massive, like, I think 52% discount or something like that. It was really, really worth it. So I must say the thing with Darcel Yanzi and the way that he teaches that he does all the little things and he slows it down, all the little things that leads up into his big throw. And you know, a lot of times when you see instructional videos, you just see the person get the grip and they enter for the throw. Maybe there's some movements and such like that. But what Darcel Yanzi does, and I mean, I incorporated this into my judo a very long time ago, is just the little hitching and twitching movements to get people to react. And I think that's such a key difference. A big difference between what makes a really experienced person versus somebody who's just still kind of learning. I'll just use myself for example. Back when I earned my Shodan, I wasn't doing all the little things that I do currently right now. And that was, I mean, I earned my Shodan, my God, what, 14 years ago? Yeah. So, I mean, there's been a lot of personal growth in my own judo, and it's the little movements, the subtleties that have really, where my judo has really improved. Now, I must say, I don't get to actually practice much these days because I'm usually teaching or I'm usually actually doing, you know, because a lot of times, when I'm teaching, I don't have a lot of good uke in at least for my adult class. The kids are completely different. And again, I'm going to get all to what I've been doing personally in just a bit. But you know, I don't get to practicing much. So, you know, so over these years, these are things that I've incorporated into my judo to try and create opportunities of attack. And they're very useful. Just, you know, a little hip twitch, a little flick of your wrist can create so much of a reaction and so much of an opening that it's just enough to get in there and to be able to execute a throw. And these are the little type of things that I try and teach in my own classes. Because, you know, for me, and clearly this is just bias, I've always been a smaller guy. And a lot of times when I see big guys demonstrate or teach judo, they're teaching what works for them. But a lot of those big guys, they've never really had to struggle with trying to throw somebody 100 pounds heavier than you. How do you get those angles? You know, the big guy, it's for a lot of them anyway, not all of them, but for a lot of them, it's relatively easy. You just power it through. You just impose your will. But you have, when you're a small guy like myself, you have to be a little more crafty and a little more devious and sneaky. Oh, with your entries and creating angles of attack. And Darcel Yanzi in this video is very good. Even if he doesn't explicitly state it, he's very good with exactly demonstrating exactly how he moves the lapel, exactly how he moves his hips, exactly where he steps. And I think that's really the real value of this video. It's not really about the throws. It's more about the action and the entries and the movement, which is what really makes this sport so beautiful to watch. It really is, at least for me. So yeah, if you have an opportunity to buy it, I highly recommend it. And like I said earlier, moving forward with any new episodes, I hope to cover a judo fanatics video at least every episode or maybe every other episode, because I think it's good for you guys to know if you are on the fence of purchasing a video. It's good for you to know what you're actually purchasing. All right, so now I want to get to some of the personal things. This is for my longtime listeners, that the people who have, all 13 of you out there, right? No, it's been a lot more than that. I want to do this, give you guys a little bit of update what's been going on with me. Really, it's been all positive. And I'll start with the fact that that I have been teaching judo at my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu club for the past year and a half. In July, it'll mark 2 years since I've been teaching. And I don't know if you guys, for people who listen to the Tatami Talk podcast, it's a fantastic podcast. I was a guest on there a little bit over a year ago, and I talked a little bit about, you know, the teaching at the club and such. And it has been a real blessing in my life. I sincerely mean that. You know, when I started the program, the head coach of the club, Jordan Wilson, Zikaro Academy in Mariana. Now, that doesn't give you guys an open license to try and hunt me down or anything like that, because that's let's just say I live near somewhere in the vicinity of Mariana. Anyway, so it had been about a year or so since I had been a part of the club before I actually started teaching there. I think that the coach wanted to make sure that I was, you know, that I was a decent person, that I wasn't just some schmo just coming by saying, oh yeah, I want to teach judo, and then not really show any real commitment to the club or to the kids. And I completely understand that, and certainly would expect that, because, you know, you don't want some rando guy showing up and being like, hey, can I teach judo here? And, you know, just using their mats. So I kind of had to really, which was never an issue. I was going to become involved in the club no matter what. But they had to see that for myself. And when I started the club, I really wanted to, I really was more interested in teaching adults. I wasn't really, the idea of teaching kids was just kind of one of those eye-rolling thoughts at first. Like, oh, okay, well, if I've got to teach judo here, I suppose I got to teach the kids. But honestly, very quickly, it has become really one of my favorite things to do. Now, listen, I love teaching the adults. And I love teaching the adults because it allows me to teach judo in a very detailed way that I can't do with kids. But the kids are really fun. I probably have, if I were to count every kid that's really a part of the club, I probably got about, gosh, like 18 kids. Of course, they don't all show up at the same time. Most of the time, it's anywhere between 10 and 12 kids. And you know what? For a judo club that meets once a week or so, that's really not too bad, in my opinion. I think, you know, in that regard, I would say I got about 6 to 8 adults, but they don't all show up consistently. And I've got adults that have just gotten, you know, really good over the past year or so. I've got, you know, yeah, just really good. And the really great thing, now, none of them are competing in judo tournaments. They are using these judo skills that I'm teaching them in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournaments, and they are being very successful with throws. And my thing when it comes to jiu-jitsu is I don't care that much whether or not they get the throws. Now, they're getting the throws, don't get me wrong. But my God, it's like, I hate saying this because I know people at the club are going to hear this and people in jiu-jitsu are going to hear this, but I got to say it. Like, the stand-up game in jiu-jitsu in the gi is largely very terrible. Like, I'm not just saying terrible, I mean very terrible. And it's just, yeah, I hate to say it, but it's true. It's just there, you know, when you are experienced in judo, there are just things that come second nature in terms of gripping that is just not very apparent to people that are in jiu-jitsu. So they end up doing like wrestling tie-ups and stuff in gis, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess that'll work, but that's going to be really hard to do against somebody that has a clue. Now, I'm talking single legs and double legs aside. I mean, there's people that try and get underhooks and overhooks in a gi. And look, I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying it's really hard when somebody knows what they're doing with the gripping. So a lot of my focus is in gripping strategies. And I feel like I found a strategy that I want both the kids and the adults employing. I really like, and of course this could just be instructor bias, but I'm a big proponent of one-handed judo. Not in all situations, but when it comes to teaching, I like teaching one-handed judo because what ends up happening, especially with the kids, is that when they get two hands on the gi, they're just like bulls in china shops, right? They just grip up and they get head to head and they're just moving like I don't know, like imagine two bulls that are locked up by the horns and they don't want to move quickly. They don't want to take any risks. They don't want to give up any ground. And they've become very static in their movements. So I don't want them always doing one-handed judo, but a lot of the things that I teach is based off of the, you know, dominating a particular side of the body because I just really feel like if you can manage the distance and control the shoulders, even if they pull guard, you know, if you outgrip them and they pull guard, to me, that's a win. That's a win. And you know, as long as they end up pulling guard in with an inferior grip, that's a win for me. But these kids are throwing bombs at competitions in jiu-jitsu. And largely it's because kids in jiu-jitsu and adults for that matter really are, unless they wrestled or had judo experience, they're largely clueless on their feet. And it's because jiu-jitsu does not have an inherent stand-up grappling style. So I'm very happy and very fortunate to be able to share, you know, the little bit of knowledge that I have, and see these kids and adults get better. And the kids, it's just a lot of fun. You know, now, for my longtime listeners, you all know that I have sons and stepdaughters and such. Well, now they're all adults. So I kind of feel like I can be a dad all over again to younger kids. And I'm really making the most out of it. I wish I had more time to do at least twice a week. But and here's another thing I must say. So there's a lot of things that I've learned being a judo instructor over the past year and a half. So I must say, everything that I talked about that I would like to see improvements in judo clubs over the years, I've employed in my own club, and it's worked. It's definitely worked. So I didn't think my ideas were very far-fetched, but every idea that I had that I put into practice has actually worked. Another thing that I've learned is that going to judo once a week, you do get better. You're not going to progress very quickly through you know, gaining skills, but there is no question that if you go to judo once a week for 6 months, provided that you have a good instructor and an attentive person, and whether I'm a good instructor or not remains to be seen. I know people in judo would probably debate that, but there is no doubt that I'm an attentive instructor and I'm very quick to correct mistakes. I'm very quick to encourage and I'm extremely slow to be overly critical. Because for me, I am the lowest of the lowest level of judo coaches in the United States. I am the recreational level coach. And who was it? I think this was Chris Round that I had a conversation with probably about a year or so ago where we were talking about, you know, kind of the levels of judo coaching and stuff. And, you know, he said, you know, when I was explaining, you know, what I'm doing with the club, you know, he kind of told me that, you know, we need coaches like me in this country. Yeah, everybody, you know, we don't need more sensei. I don't need to be a sensei to share my knowledge of judo. I don't need to be a fourth dan. I'll probably die a nidan, and I'm perfectly okay with that. I'm perfectly okay with never developing a national champion. That's not who I am. Who I am is an entry-level judo coach that is trying to make judo accessible to my local community and by being the best version of myself that I can be. And I think I've done a really good job at my club. You know, the parents are pleased with what I'm doing. The kids are responsive and the adults genuinely enjoy coming to class when they can make it. And, you know, the other thing that I've really learned about adult judo is now I kind of get it why jiu-jitsu is so much more popular than judo. I mean, We're talking millions of people in the United States doing judo versus what? Maybe 20,000? I mean, my God, as a Nidan right now, like, I'm a rare dude. I mean, think of it. If there's like 20,000 judoka in the country, that's not 20,000 black belts. That's 20,000 judo students, period. So, and then a lot of those people, they may make it to Shodan, but never ever try and make it to Nidan and, you know, so on and so forth. So I'm kind of a rare bird in that regard. All right. So where was I going with that? Oh yeah. Adults in judo. So here's the thing that I've really learned. Now, throughout my time in judo, I've always done, you know, desk job. I've been in IT for over 20 years. So when I'm done with work, like my body hasn't been like it's, I've not been physically strained. In order to get physical exercise, I actually have to go do judo or go to a gym or anything like that. But where I live, and I'm sure it's like this everywhere in the country, like there's a lot of guys that do manual labor. They're roofers, they're contractors, they laying tile, they're plumbers. They're doing a lot of manual labor. And to sit there and to put them through the paces of a really hard judo workout after they've had a long 10 to 12 hour day, like that's not what a lot of people are looking for. Now, some guys can and some guys do, and great, like I can be there to the best of my ability, but not everybody is. So, you know, all I care about is sharing. I'm not looking to produce black belts. I'm not looking to produce, you know, national champions or big time competitors. I just want people to walk through the door and try out judo so I can share with those people something that I love doing and why I love doing it. And everybody has a great time too. And I really feel that with this approach that I'm getting students that I would never get if I was running like some kind of hard time club. Like I've got a 60-year-old student. I've got a 59-year-old student. These are guys that come with some consistently. It's consistency. They can't come all the time, and I completely understand that. But when they show up, I'm very happy that they're there. And you know, I got another dude that man, he works harder than everybody. He's a really tough dude. I've promoted him to green belt, and he deserves it. I mean, he's a contractor, and he tries to make it not just to my class. He tries to make it to every class at the club. He does gi, he does no gi, he does boxing, he does wrestling, he does judo, and he's really taking it all in. He's a really tough dude. And you know, I got a couple of other younger guys that man, if they actually knew the terminology, like they it's, I don't even know how they do it. Like they come once every 2 to 3 weeks, maybe once a month. They show up and somehow they get better. I have no idea how it is, but you should see them doing throw for throw Rondori, Yakusoku Gaiko. Like they look like black belts out there. It's unbelievable. Now, when they actually do Rondori, they kind of stiffen up a bit, but in the way that they move and their footwork and their gripping and their throws, like they look phenomenal. I can't believe it. I mean, I don't want to take all the credit, but like I'm just kind of wondering myself, gosh, is it me or is it them? Like I just don't know. But I'm gonna give them the credit. It's you know, it's probably them and less me. But and then the kids, they just all of them just it's just a lot of fun with the kids. Like I said before, it's like being a dad all over again. And I get to be the best version of myself at the club. And I, you know, it's almost sad, and I don't mean it to be sad, but like my own family probably, if they were to see a video of me teaching or they were to actually see me teach, they almost probably wouldn't recognize me. Not that I mean my wife for sure, but like, you know, my other sons, like I was so worried about raising kids that I was maybe a little too, I wouldn't say demanding, but just, you know, when a parent worries, it can come out in their parenting. But I wish I was more like, I wish I was the kind of parent, you know, while they were going up through their formative years, that I am with the kids today. Because if I was, I just think they'd need a lot less therapy. I'm kidding. No, but you know, I just wish that was a... Now, okay, maybe 7-10 years ago, I just wasn't in that place in my life personally. I've done a lot of growing personally. I think it has a lot of it has to do with where I live. This is probably going to rub people the wrong way, but like, I'm originally from New York City. I lived in Tampa, and now I live in the sticks. And now that I live in the sticks, the more I get away from big city life, even though I love New York City, I love it. It'll always be home to me. But to me, city living is not natural as a human being. And this is not for a judo podcast or anything. Maybe I'll start some other different podcasts and stuff. But being in the woods, you know, having deer run through my yard, seeing rabbits eating up all my greens, which frustrates me, you know, growing things and just, you know, being surrounded by woods and I just have a greater appreciation for all forms of life. And I just think I was so heads down with working and raising a family and commuting and blah, 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 that kind of thing, that just being up in the country has helped me take a step back and really appreciate really all the wonderful things that have happened in my life. Even when there's been some difficulties, like, for example, a little more than a year ago, I got laid off from my job. I was working for a mortgage company in IT for 10 years. And I lost my job. So I decided to kind of go into business for myself. And I'm working for the state of Florida as an independent consultant. And things have never been better. Now, that all may come to a crashing halt in the middle of the year once Florida passes their budget and stuff. But for right now, it's pretty fantastic. And I hope to be with really, I'm working for the Department of Education. I hope to be with them for the long term because, you know, working for the state and who I am as a person right now, like, I genuinely feel like I'm doing important work. I'm not doing work to help a company meet a bottom line. The work that I'm doing directly impacts families and directly impacts families that are within my own community. And I think it's important work. And I hope I can stick around for a long time. I'm certainly, you know, that's what I'm willing for myself. So that's really been, you know, the long and short of it. I've also never been in, well, I shouldn't say never. Let me take that back. I look fantastic. I've dropped 12 pounds in the past since the beginning of the year, and I'm floating right around 150 pounds. I never thought I would ever get to anywhere near a weight where I could potentially compete in an under 66 kilo division judo tournament. I'm not going to do that. But I do want to compete in jiu-jitsu because I know I'm going to be up for my purple belt. I know by the end of the year when the promotion ceremony happens, I know it's going to happen. But for me, I really feel like I should compete once at blue belt and just get it out of my system, win or lose. It doesn't matter to me. I just want to get out there and just give it one more try competing. It's been a long time since I've competed in judo, and I've never done it in jiu-jitsu. And I just really want to get that off of... You just get it off my plate and maybe compete once a belt. And, you know, I got to say, I am really, well, one, I love the jiu-jitsu club I'm a part of. It's like a family to me. And two, I've really gone from liking jiu-jitsu to loving jiu-jitsu. I really love doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. To me, as I've said for many years, it's just an extension of judo. I couldn't care less about no-gi. I do not care. In my mind, I already do two grappling sports, and to me, no-gi jiu-jitsu is a completely different sport with different tactics and stuff. I couldn't care less. All I care about is being good at jujitsu in the gi. I don't need to become an ultimate grappler. I don't need to learn heel hooks because I don't care. I just don't care. Doesn't interest me one bit. And I gotta say, in jujitsu, the way that I'm moving, like I just pull stuff out of my backside, it seems, and it seems to work. Like I've really gotten a feel for jujitsu in the same way that I kind of have a feel for judo. Now, my timing in judo is off right now. I was doing my best judo probably about 4 or 5 years ago, like in terms of just that smooth timing, effortless throws. You know how people say, oh, I get those effortless throws maybe once every 6 months. Like there was a time, like say about 5 years ago, I was getting about 3 or 4 of those every round of Rondori. Like my timing was just spot on for a lot of things. It's not that way anymore, but in jiu-jitsu, I just kind of, I don't even know half the things that I'm doing. Like I just do it. It's hard to explain. It's all really come together. I don't think when I'm training. I just move. Sometimes the only time I really think when I'm training is if I'm going against somebody that's really better. And sometimes I'm put in a position where I'm like, oh, that's kind of new. But I kind of feel like at this point in my jiu-jitsu that like there, I would say 90%+ of situations that I face in jiu-jitsu, I have an answer for. I just do. It's not always the perfect answer, but I feel like I have something that I can do in every situation that I can face. And I just kind of make it up as I go along. So I guess in that sense, I'm pretty much doing judo on the ground, which is in my view, in a gi, it's what Brazilian jiu-jitsu is, just under a different rule set. And, you know, I really hate when people say Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, basically just judo. Okay, yeah, fine. Show me the judo instructor that teaches you spider guard. Show me the judo instructor that teaches you de la Riva guard. That actually teaches sequences and entries and positions from those positions. You know, it doesn't exist in judo. And that's fine. That's fine. To me, there is no judo versus Brazilian jiu-jitsu debate. It's two different sports that share a similar history, and that's that. And I love doing both of them. It's just a heck of a lot of fun. So yeah, if you're ever in Marianna, Florida, feel free to come by Zikro Academy. It's off of Kelson. That's Kelson Ave. And I'm there, Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Oh, one thing, speaking of Saturdays, what's really interesting is that the head coach, Jordan, and myself, we have a joint judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu class for the kids. It was kind of a way for me to get an extra day or half a day or half a class with the kids to reinforce the things that we were working on the night before, because I teach judo on Friday nights. And basically, the first half of the class, I teach a throw. And the second half of the class, we work on, Jordan teaches whatever jiu-jitsu technique that he's teaching. And then when we do the sparring or the rondori, the kids start on their feet. And the one rule that we have in the club, for at least for that class, is no guard pulling. You cannot pull guard. If you want to get to the ground, you got to get down there with a takedown or a throw. And the kids are coming along. They respect that rule. If I see them pull guard, I make them stand back up. We all make them stand back up. So I don't know if there's any jiu-jitsu clubs in the country that run a similar class like that. We might have invented something here, Jordan. I don't know. But it's a heck of a lot of fun. And again, I just really enjoy teaching. It's been a tremendous blessing. And this club has been a tremendous, positive, wholesome experience in my life. All right. So I think that's about going to do it for another hideous episode of the Judo Chop Suey podcast. I haven't decided if I'm going to label this episode, I can't remember what episode I ended at, but I think I'm going to be doing this as season 2, episode 1. So wiping the slate clean as if season 1 never happened. But it did happen. And I used to have socials, and I don't really have them anymore. I'm really not on Twitter anymore. I uninstalled Instagram, and I've been off of Facebook for years because I don't want to be part of somebody's algorithm. So if you want to reach out to me at all, connect with me, say hello, you tell me off, whatever you want to do, you can write me at judochopsuishow@gmail.com. Yeah, you know what? For me, the socials really became a time sink, and I started looking at my usage, and I'm like, goodness, on Instagram, I think I was browsing for 40 minutes. Do you know what I could do in 40 minutes is prepare another episode of the Judo Chop Suey podcast. That's exactly what I can do. And I think that's how I'm going to be utilizing my time. I've also been using that time to learn all sorts of new things, like a new programming language and that kind of stuff. So getting rid of the socials was a good thing. I might open up my Instagram. I didn't delete my account. It's still there. People who have been following me for years can still see it, but I put a stop to it about, you know, a month and a half or 2 months ago at least. But I may just log in quickly to announce the podcast is back, and then I'll just uninstall the app again. So with all that being said, I hope you all have a great day. I hope you all have a great rest of the week. Train hard. Stay safe out there. And until next time, I'm out. Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Oppan Gangnam Style.
The after party starts in 15 minutes.
Welcome to the after party. So for those of you who are new to the podcast, this is the part of the podcast that I keep separate from the rest of the podcast, where I talk about things that are not related to judo, but it's a lot of times things that I want to get off my chest or things that I'm watching on TV or whatever the case may be. I still keep it very light. But sometimes there's things that I just want to talk about that's not related to judo, and I just don't think it's appropriate to put this in the podcast. So I keep it at the very end, after the end credits and that kind of thing. That way, if you stick around, if you're just a diehard, you get to listen to me rant on things some more. So first things first, I got to say, a lot of TV and movies suck these days. They really do. Like, perfect example is Reacher. Reacher season 2 was just terrible for me. I mean, he's not a superhero. He's supposed to be a regular guy. And when there's a show about a regular tough guy, I want to see the guy do regular tough guy things, not things that I would see in a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. And I don't want to give away Reacher in what happened in that season finale, that whole scene with the helicopter and the gurney and everything. I mean, it just, when I saw that, I turned to my wife. I told her, I'm sorry I put you through this because this is terrible. I told her I wanted to believe that this show is going to end on a high note, and I was waiting for the big payoff, and this apparently was it. And this is terrible. And I'm sorry from the bottom of my heart. I'm sorry that I made you sit through 8 episodes of this. And so I was very disappointed with Reacher season 2. Now, finally, Disney Plus, or these days I call it Disney Minus, they finally got a show right, sort of, was Echo. Now, they got, what's his name? Oh, Vincent D'Onofrio playing the Kingpin, which I think, in terms of a character actor, he's... other than Robert Downey Jr. playing Iron Man, I think he plays the best character in the MCU. I think he's that good. And his portrayal of the Kingpin is just amazing. I got roped into watching this show called Expats with my wife. And this is the thing. She'll never listen to this, so it doesn't matter. She picks terrible shows. She really does. Except for Big Little Lies, which I thought was a fantastic show on HBO. Except for that, she usually picks really bad shows. And like I always show her, because I'm big on the Rotten Tomatoes scores. Like, I'm really big on that. Like, if the show's got a score less than 80, I don't want to be bothered with. And she always picks these shows that, like, I try and tell her, like, look at the tomato meter. It's like at a 55. I don't want to watch this. And then I usually relent, because of course she reminds me of Reacher, which, you know, I think Reacher got a high score on the tomato meter. I disagree with that. But yeah, usually she picks shows that sucks, and it's so Expats was not, it was a waste of a show. Honestly, there was no real point to it. You may as well just do a show on my life and just follow me around. You know, deal. Except I'm more interesting than a bunch of rich people living in Hong Kong. Honestly, it was just not very interesting. You know what would have been cool is if they actually did a show on the poor people living in Hong Kong who act as servers and housemaids and stuff to the rich people, and how, what their lives are like, you know, after they leave those homes and get together. Like, that was more interesting than the actual rich people storyline. It's just terrible show. I don't waste your time with it. What else? Have I seen any good movies lately? Spirited. Fantastic. It's my new favorite Christmas movie. Spirited with what's his name? Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell. Fantastic Christmas movie. I saw it for the first time last year, but I saw it again this year. That's going to be like my favorite. It has replaced A Christmas Story for me, and it has replaced It's a Wonderful Life. Like, now every year it's Spirited or nothing. If we don't watch Spirited, it's not Christmas. Now, I must say, on a positive note, last year there were two shows that I watched on Netflix that I thought were phenomenal, which was The Night Agent, and I believe the other one was called The Diplomat. I highly recommend that. Hey, Curb Your Enthusiasm's back, speaking of Vince Vaughn, because he's in that show as a semi-regular. God, I hated seeing Richard Lewis pass away. He looks so... He didn't look very good in the last season of Curb, and but it's good to see, you know, the same cast of characters back again one more time for very last season. Even though it's season 12, but I think the show first aired in 2000, like 24 years ago. So far the season has been fantastic. I hope they bring back Maria Sophia, because she's absolutely my favorite. Next to Leon, of course, and Larry. But Maria Sophia last season and this season was just an amazing, amazing character. Just one of the best secondary characters that show has ever put on. It's just fabulous. All right, that's it for me. Until next time.